it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most diehard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast brought to you by the incomparable Alumni Hall. I am your host, Tyler, and guys, I don't think that I can adequately express to you just how excited I am about today's episode. Let's just suffice it to say that I am absolutely jacked. I've got a little extra bounce in my step today. The dopamine is flowing freely because I actually get to talk some real, hardcore, legit college football today. Of course, on this podcast, we always talk college football. That's kind of what we do here on this podcast. But in all honesty, during the offseason, it always feels a little contrived in a way. The topics get stale. It's a lot of off-the-field topics, which, yeah, we'll talk about because It's fodder, right? It's talking points. But really, all I want to do is talk ball. I want to talk to players. I want to talk to teams. I want to break down matchups, games, all that kind of stuff. And during the offseason, of course, we don't have games to preview. We don't have games to recap. We don't have matchups to break down, at least not during the early parts of the offseason. But today, we do. We are talking actual football today, my friends. We're evaluating teams. I'm breaking down games. All the things that I live for. All the things that get that dopamine flowing. So I am very, very excited today. Because in case you missed it, I know you didn't if you listen to this podcast, but just in case there's someone out there that did miss it, DraftKings revealed some of the early lines for several of Georgia's games this year, basically for the bigger games on our schedule. So today, I'm going to begin the process of going through each of those games. I'm going to tell you whether I think each line is too high, too low, or just right, and more importantly, why. We're not about just hot takes on this show. I want to give you guys the actual thought process behind it. I want to back up these opinions. So that's what I'm going to do today. And along the way, I'm going to break down the teams, the games, the whole nine yards, all of that stuff. Now, I have a lot to say. You guys know me by now. I am not one, shall we say, for brevity. I am all about the details, diving deep. That's what I love to do. So to do that adequately and to give each of these lines the discussion they deserve, I'm going to break it up into two episodes, which works out real nicely because there are six of these game lines, these betting lines that have been revealed. So I'll do three today and I'll do the other three tomorrow. So I'm not going to make you guys wait long. I just don't want you to have like a 2.5 hour podcast, which if I got rolling with all these games, that's probably what it would end up being. So I'm going to break it up for you guys. Now, I am going to go into detail. I'm going to go into a lot more detail than I think most other people out there are going to do, because this is really the first time that we've really had a chance to do this during the offseason. Talk teams, talk games, matchups, all that kind of stuff. So I am going to go into some depth, but I'm not going to go into like scouting the enemy level depth, because we do have those episodes coming up later this summer where I'm going to take the ultimate deep dive into each of these teams. All of you longtime listeners, you know how those episodes go. And for some of our newer listeners, you will find out. You will find out in very short order. But those are always by far the most popular episodes that we do during the off season. And I am very much already hard at work on those. I'm still in the early stages of my deep dives into evaluating these teams, but I am far enough along to have what I would call an informed opinion on these teams that I can bring to you, certainly as it relates to these early betting lines. And we will get to that in just a moment. But first, I do want to just really quickly remind you guys about our new YouTube channel. I call it a new YouTube channel. Yeah, we did technically start it last summer, but I did like, I don't know, 5 or 6 videos. And once we got in the season, I kind of just got overwhelmed and just didn't, because I didn't really know what I was doing. So I kind of had to abandon during the season until I figured out how to do it more. But now, during the off season, I've had more time. I've figured out more how to do these things and I've got more of a process. So this is something that is going to carry on. It's not going to be one of those cases where it gets into the season again. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm busy. I don't have time to do this. I'm going to do it. I am making the investment and I've purchased a lot of equipment and a lot of software to make this happen. So yes, I am into this and we are going to make it happen. But I am in the very early stages of getting this YouTube channel launched, and I need your help. Let's just be real. I need your help to get this thing off the ground. We have, I think, well, let me last check, like 558 subscribers, which is, you know, it's a solid for a new channel, but still pretty modest, certainly. And there's room for growth. And here's the thing, guys. I so sincerely appreciate all of you that have subscribed to that channel, because I know a lot of you have, and I am so grateful for that, support. But I also know that what 558 subscribers, that is a very small fraction of the listener base of this program. I see the listener numbers, I get that data. So that's why I know there's only a small number of you that are subscribed to the YouTube channel. And it's all good, guys. Again, I know that we are just getting this thing started. Some of you might be like I was when I got the YouTube channel started, like, just not like a YouTube guy or gal. I totally get that, because I'll be honest with you, I never did really consume things on YouTube, like content. I would watch videos on YouTube, like if I need to figure out how to rehab my Achilles, which I was dealing with for about 3 months. Or how to fix my TV when the volume just starts randomly going wild, going up and down at will without me pressing the buttons on the remote at all. Those kind of things. That's what I use YouTube for. I wasn't using it for like college football content or anything like that, which is a big part of why I never really got into the YouTube game. It took us a long time to go in that direction. I mean, almost 10 years. So we're going into our 10th season covering this team. And so like, yeah, 9 years it took us to even like remotely think about doing YouTube, because it just was not something that I was personally all that familiar with. I'm not like, I guess, old, but I'm older than the youngest generations that has grown up on YouTube and things like that. And that's how they watch podcasts. They don't listen to podcasts. They watch podcasts. That's apparently what people do. I have never really done that. I don't get why you'd rather just sit there and watch like my bald head. I mean, maybe that's cool if people want to do that, but I get it. That's what I'm saying. I get it if YouTube has never really been your thing and you'd rather listen to the podcast here on Apple Pod or Spotify, wherever you get it, and not watch it. I totally get that. That makes a lot of sense to me. In fact, again, I don't watch podcasts on YouTube. I don't understand why you'd want to do that, but some people do, and that's great. I'm just not of that generation. But even if you're like me and you are of my generation, here's what I will tell you. I am going to be putting content on that YouTube channel that I simply cannot do via this podcast, like just the audio version, because I can't break down film for you guys. I mean, I can tell you what I see on film, but I can't show you. And some of the things that I'm breaking down, it just translates better if I can show you those things. So if you listen to this podcast because you like the way that we break down games and break down opponents and our analysis of our players, all those things, if that's why you like this podcast, I'm telling you, you're going to want to subscribe to this YouTube channel and watch the video content, because I am going to be able to present content to you guys in a way that I never have been able to before. It's taken me a long time, old man here, old man Rivers, to figure this out, but I have kind of figured this out. So I'm excited about it. I put a lot of effort into it, invested a lot of money into some of the software, the hardware to be able to do this. I didn't do it for me. I did it for you guys. So I want you to be subscribed, because I want you to be able to see things that I'm seeing so I can actually show it to you. I'm working on a video right now. I'm hoping to have it out by the end of the week that is explaining to you why I believe that Benjamin Urosik, the transfer from Stanford, is going to be our secret weapon at tight end, and how we're going to be able to do a lot of the same things, all of the same things really, that we did with Brock Bowers. We're going to be able to do those same things with Benjamin Urosik. Maybe not to the same level because he's not Brock Bowers, but I want to show you the kind of player this is. I've been telling you about him since we signed him, but I want to be able to show you guys that. And I've cut up a bunch of tape, a bunch of clips to show you all that. So that's what I'm talking about. So if you have it in you, I would so sincerely appreciate it. First of all, I just appreciate you guys listening. That's the best way to support this podcast. Thank you so much for that. But if you don't mind, it'd be amazing if you could just go to YouTube, search for Glory UGA Podcast, subscribe so you can get all the videos straight to your feed. So when I post one of those cool video breakdowns, the film breakdowns. You'll have it right there. I'm gonna do some X's and O's stuff. My plan is to have an entire scheme theme month. This summer, I think the month of June is gonna be the scheme theme month, and I'm gonna do a bunch of breakdowns of just like schematically what Georgia does. I'll do some like in general scheme breakdowns, but also specifically what do we do? What does Georgia do? So yeah, again, those are things that I can talk about in the podcast, but it translates so much better if you can see it. So I think you'll love it. I really do. So give that a shot. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. But enough of that, guys. Let's go ahead. Let's dive into these games. And we're going to start at the top. At the beginning of the season, the first game of the schedule, we're going to work our way down. So the three games I'm going to be talking about today are Clemson, Alabama, and Auburn. And then on tomorrow's episode, we'll do Texas, Florida, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. Okay, I counted wrong. I thought there were six games. Apparently, there are seven, guys. So, seven games. We'll do three today, and we'll do four more of them tomorrow. But let's go ahead. Let's start with Clemson. Week one, baby. We are right now, according to DraftKings, a 13.5-point favorite over the Clemson Tigers here on May the 8th. 13.5 points, essentially a 2-touchdown favorite over Clemson. Now, the Clemson fans, when these lines came out, they were all screaming, disrespect, disrespect, disrespect. Of course they're going to feel that way because this is a proud program. Certainly in recent history, it wasn't that long ago that they were winning national championships. But it just seems so long ago, right? It just seems so long ago at this point from the days that Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence were throwing touchdowns for the Tigers. And they were consistently making the college football playoff. And was it 6 years in a row they made the college football playoff? Something crazy like that. And then winning 2 national championships in that span. But that is not, emphatically not, where that Clemson program is right now. And there's a variety of reasons for that. This is a program that has recruited well, but they're not a recruiting superpower. They're not a consistent top 5 recruiting program. They're hovering around the top 10 range usually, but they don't recruit at Georgia's level. They don't recruit at Alabama's level. They just don't. They recruit well relative to the rest of the country, just not at that top tier level. They're kind of in like the next tier behind the top tier. And that's always been the case. What allowed them to compensate for that is they just hit on quarterbacks. They hit on 2 of them, right? They hit on Deshaun Watson and they hit on Trevor Lawrence. And then they had the good fortune of playing the ACC, so their path to college playoff was much easier. And if you get there, then anybody can beat anybody once you get the college playoff in a one-off setting. So they rode that formula to 2 national championships in a 6-year span. But they were always playing with fire because you cannot count on consistently hitting on quarterback after quarterback after quarterback after quarterback. They hit on 2 in a row, and that's hard enough. They did that. But then it was DJ Uiagalelei, right? That was supposed to be the next guy. Well, we all know how that turned out. They missed on DJU. And what happened? Well, Clemson all of a sudden not making college football playoffs anymore. Clemson's not a true contender for a national championship. And then they move on from DJU, and then it's Cade Klubnik. Well, Cade Klubnik's going to return us to glory. He's that next guy at quarterback. No, he's not. He's not. If you watched him last year, he's just not. Not a bad player. He's just not that guy. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not Deshaun Watson. And for Clemson to win national championships with the roster that they have, which is really good, like top 10 level good, but top 10 level good doesn't win you national championships unless you have a true difference maker at quarterback. And when they don't have a guy like that, yeah, they'll win 9 or 10 games in the ACC, but they're not going to make the college football playoff. They're not a true legitimate contender for a national championship. And that's still where this program is because they don't have a roster for it and they don't have the quarterback that can compensate for the talent gap on their roster compared with the roster of like Georgia or Alabama or now Texas, teams like that. Now, the great equalizer in this day and age would be the transfer portal, right? If you don't recruit at a high school at an elite level, well, that's okay. You can compensate for that by making a splash in the transfer portal the way that Ole Miss, for instance, has done, right? Well, no, because Dabo knows better, guys. Dabo knows better. They don't use a transfer portal. In fact, they shun the transfer portal. The transfer portal is anathema to Dabo Swinney. He has some deep aversion to it. And this year's case in point, they had 12 players leave their program and enter the transfer portal. How many did they take to compensate for losing those 12 players? 0. Not one single player. They simply don't use it. It does not exist to them. On some level, I do understand the thought process behind it. I know what Dabo Swinney is going for. He's saying it's about culture. We recruit guys, we sell them on, we're going to take care of you, you're going to come in here, you're going to have a chance to develop, and when it's your turn, you are going to play. And if we use a transfer portal and have guys come in from some other program and bypass the guys that we set in their living room with their parents and told them to their face, hey, we got you covered, and you're going to have your chance to play. Well, I get that, man, and that is an honorable way to do it, but it's also an archaic way to do it. If that is the approach that you are going to take in the day and age of NIL and the transfer portal, I'm sorry, you're just not going to win national championships. You are not serious about winning national championships because you know what? Every other team in the country is doing it. Every other team in the country is filling the holes, their misses from their high school recruiting ranks, they're filling those holes with the transfer portal. Clemson's not doing that, guys. They are tying two hands behind their own backs. They are cutting off their own legs. No one's doing it to them. They are doing it. So Clemson, the last couple years, and certainly this year as well, they have holes in their roster. They have elite players at certain positions. Absolutely. No questions asked. But they have holes all up and down that roster at some key spots, especially the offensive line. That's been the case for years because they haven't hit at those spots in the high school recruiting ranks. And if they don't hit, they just got to roll with it. That's who they've got. They're not bringing in competition. They're not bringing in better players from outside the program. They're just not doing it. They're counting on, we're going to recruit these guys, we're going to develop them. Well, what happens when you miss on an evaluation? What happens when a guy doesn't develop the way you thought he was going to develop? Well, you have what Clemson is right now. You have a team that's good because they still recruited a top 10-ish level, but they're not good enough to win a national championship. And that's the team that we will be facing this year to open the season in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. In the artist formerly known as the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic, what is the AFLAC Kickoff Classic now? That's the reality, guys. The reality is that no one bats 1,000 recruiting, no matter how what you think of your own evaluation skills. Even Kirby Smart doesn't bat 1,000. He hits at a really, really high rate, but he doesn't bat 1,000. So when you miss, that means either A, you have holes, like I said, or now you may be having to rely on younger players. Like you're saying, okay, well, this freshman class, these guys got to hit for us. Like they got to be difference makers in year one. And what do I tell you guys all the time? Teams that are in the business of having to rely on true freshmen to be impact players for them in year one, you are not a legitimate national championship contender. If you have to rely on it, it's great. Like for us, it's great that Brock Bowers in 2021 was ready to be a difference maker in year one. That's great. But we weren't in a position to have to count on that. Brock was great for us, but we are not in a position any single year of having to count on true freshmen to be difference makers for us. What we get from them is gravy, baby. It's a luxury. Clemson's in a position where they need guys like Sammy Brown to come in and be dudes right away, and maybe they will be, but do you want to bet on that? You want to count on that? If that's where you are as a program, again, I don't think you're a serious national championship contender. And that's what I think of Clemson right now. So when you see that line, I know you're like, well, Clemson 13.5. Well, I mean, it's Clemson, right? I mean, that's a big line. Well, Clemson's not what they were 5 or 6 years ago. That's not what this Clemson program is anymore. That was pre-transfer portal NIL era. In the transfer portal NIL era, they're a 9, maybe 10 win team. It could even go down like an 8 win team at times. Doesn't mean they're not a good program. It's still a good program. It's a good team. Dabo Swinney is still a good coach. They still have really good players relative to most other teams out there, but they don't have top 2, 3, 4, 5 level talent. They just simply don't. Now, saying all that, if you look at Clemson's numbers last year, they're actually, they weren't bad. Like Clemson was probably should have been a 10-win team last year. Maybe even had an outside shot of being an 11-win team in the regular season. Now, a large function of that is the ACC. Let's just be real. Not good. It's not a good conference. But there were multiple games last year they should have won, but they didn't. And they hurt themselves significantly in games last year. We'll go through each of those here in a minute. But you guys that have been listening to the show for a long time, you know I'm big on yardage margin, right? And for you newer listeners, what I mean by yardage margin, it's very simple. You take the number of yards you gained, and from that, you subtract the number of yards you surrendered to your opponents. And what you're left with, that is your yardage margin. How much did you either outgain your opponents by, or how much did your opponents outgain you by? I think that's a really good measure of how dominant a team was, how good a team was. And guys, typically, almost every single year, without fail, the best teams in the country have the highest yardage margin. I mean, almost every single year. In fact, if you look at it last year, I'm deep into my film study for the offseason. I'm doing my win total research, all that kind of stuff. And so I've got the top 20 mapped out here right now. Oregon, believe it or not, last year led the country in yardage margin. They were plus 2982, narrowly edging out your Georgia Bulldogs, who were plus 29.04. Oregon's a very interesting case last year, guys. I think they were better than Washington. I know that sounds insane because they lost to them twice. How can you possibly say they were better if they lost to them twice? Well, the first time they played them in Seattle, Oregon beat the hell out of them. Like, they were beaten. They should have won that game by two touchdowns. But Dan Lanning, love him, love him. He lost that game for them with just some absolutely absurdly aggressive calls, needlessly aggressive calls that, let's just be honest, cost them that game. That game should not have been close. Like, I was at a bar watching that game, and I'm like, I almost got up and walked out at one point in the fourth quarter. I was like, oh, Oregon's just going to run away with this. And then all of a sudden, I stick around, just hanging out. I'm like, oh, wait, what's happening? Dan Lanning, what are you doing? And then, yeah, they lost to him in the Pac-12 championship game, and Washington played really, really, really well in that game, and Oregon did not play particularly well. So you got to give Washington credit, but I know it sounds insane. I still think Oregon was a better team. If they played 10 times, I think Oregon probably wins like 6 or 7 of them, probably. But that's not how college football works. So tip of the cap to Washington. But Oregon was a good team last year. We were awesome last year. I think we were the best team in the country. Yes, Oregon had a better yards margin, but also they're playing in the Pac-12. Yeah, they played Washington twice, but we, by and large, playing the SEC. I know our schedule, whatever our schedule was last year. Our schedule, we still ended up playing a couple top 10 teams. Still a very difficult schedule. I still think, the best team in the country. Michigan was number 3 at plus 2036. Notre Dame was number 4 at plus 2027. Penn State, number 5 at plus 1979. Texas was number 6 at plus 1971. Ohio State, number 7 now, plus 1853. Then LSU, Oklahoma, so on and so forth. Where did Clemson come in? Oh, not so coincidentally, at number 10. What did I tell you guys they recruit? Yeah, on average, right at number 10. So over the last 4 recruiting cycles, Clemson has finished on average with the number 9.25 ranked recruiting class. They have 2 classes in the last 4 cycles at number 11, the last 2 actually, then one at number 10, and then 2021, it was a while ago, in 2021, they were number 5. So the last 4 years, 9.25, and where does Clemson rank, at least last year, in yardage margin nationally? Number 10. That's why I'm telling you guys, I think it's a really, really good measure of how good a team actually is. There are certainly teams with higher yardage margins who end up not winning as many games as their statistical profile would indicate they should, and there are teams with lower yardage margins who win more games than their statistical profile would indicate that they should. When that happens, it's a luck factor. Football, like, luck is a factor in games. Clemson, for example, was very unlucky. They had a lot of bad turnovers last year that cost them games, and maybe you can say that's just because they were making mistakes. Sure, absolutely. They had some really bad turnovers. They were terrible in the red zone, just simply could not score in the red zone. Very, very, very inefficient. And those things cost the team, Clemson, who was a top 10 caliber team last year. They lost a couple games, they had no business losing. And then you have a team like Washington, for instance, who was way, way, way down the list. Washington was 20th nationally in yardage margin last year. They were only plus 830, guys, plus 830. Yet they went 14-1. Why? Well, yeah, they had a really good quarterback and a good coach. All those things are true. Good receivers, all those things are true. They were a good team, but they snuck by the skin of their teeth, game in and game out. They got lucky. Things went their way. They absolutely should have lost that first game to Oregon. Oregon gave them that game on a silver platter. They should have lost to Stanford, guys. They should have lost to Oregon State. Oregon State beat them up and down the field that game. The problem for Oregon State is Oregon State simply, like Clemson, when they got in the red zone, they settled for field goals. They could not put the ball in the end zone, and Washington hung around, and then made a couple plays late, and they found a way to some way, somehow, miraculously pull up that game, even though Oregon State absolutely controlled that game all game long. If you watch that game, as I watched every single snap of that game, because remember, I had a big win total bet on Washington, first off, to go over, it was a 10 wins, to win the Pac-12 and to get in the College Football Playoff. So I hit big on Washington, but I shouldn't have. I really shouldn't have. They weren't that good. And I kept telling you guys that all year, getting the numbers spelled out. Georgia was more than three times as good as Washington was according to total yardage margin. I mean, we were significantly better. If we would have played Washington, we would have beat them by 3-plus touchdowns, guys. But unfortunately, you know, we screwed up. We lost to Alabama. That's on us. That's our fault. And things like that happen. But anyway, long story is that I just think that yardage margin is a really big statistic, and I think it's a really good indicator of how good a team actually is. So if you look at Clemson, my point being, Clemson was pretty good last year. They were 10th nationally yardage margin. They were essentially plus 1,500, all right? That's solid. That's typically the statistical profile of a team that goes about 10-2. If you look at the teams around Clemson, so Clemson was 9-4 last year. Oklahoma was one spot ahead of them. Oklahoma was 10-3. LSU was 10-3, a couple spots ahead of them. So Ohio State also 11-2, similar-ish. Ohio State was a little bit better, but that's typically like a 10-2, maybe a 9-3 team. And things don't go your way, but Clemson ended up being 9-4. They were 8-4 in the regular season because they made dumb mistakes. They turned the ball over like crazy. Were very inefficient in the red zone, and that cost them. But Clemson was not as bad as people want to make them out to be. They weren't national championship good. They weren't close to that, but they were also better than 8-4. So when I see 13.5, like my first inclination, you're like, well, Clemson wasn't very good last year. I think like that's kind of disrespectful to Georgia, actually. But when you peel back the layers a little bit, Clemson was a good team last year. So at a neutral site, I think 2 touchdowns right around there is a pretty fair spread right now. Certainly considering it's the first game of the season, there's always the first game jitters and things you gotta work out. Think about Clemson back in 2021. We won that game 10-3, right? Now, I know JT Daniels was starting and all that kind of stuff. But by the end of the season, if we had played Clemson again, do we only win that game by seven points? No, we'd beat Clemson by 3 touchdowns if we would have played them at the end of 2021. But that's not how that works. So week one, I get it. I think 13.5, 14 or so, that's pretty fair. Because this was a pretty decent team. Again, I mentioned some of the games that they should have won, but they didn't. Guys, they lost week one to Duke. Everyone's going, oh my God, Clemson lost to Duke. Well, they outgained Duke. If you watched that game, Clemson should have won. And it was like, no, it was a relatively close margin with the yards, but they outgained Duke 424 to 374, but they turned the ball over 3 times and multiple times inside the red zone. They just killed themselves. They just really stubbed their own toe. Florida State, if you guys watched that game, Florida State had zero business winning that game. They outgained Florida State 429 to 311. Remember, there was that one play where Kay Clubman just got blindsided on the blitz and nobody picked him up and he didn't see the guy coming. He gets crushed and then they pick it up and they return it for a touchdown. Florida State should not have won that game. And then late in the game, even despite that, Clemson still had a chance to win. They lined up, they settled for a chip shot field goal, but they had a walk-on kicker doesn't do justice. The guy they literally pulled off the street like the week before the game. That's what they had. And they go, oh, well, he can make a chip shot field goal. No, he can't. So they didn't even try to score. They didn't try to punch in the end zone there. They said, oh, we'll kick the field goal. And the guy missed it. He choked, missed the field goal. Florida State gets a chance to win the game, and they do. But Clemson outplayed them all game long. They should have won that game. NC State, same story. They outgained NC State 364 to 202, guys. Turned the ball over, did stupid things, couldn't score in the red zone, lost that game. Miami, now Miami actually outgained them, but barely. It was 362 to 345, but they turned the ball over 3 times in that game. They easily could have won, I would say, at least 3 of those games. In fact, they probably should have won 3 of those games and probably been 10-2, 11-1 the regular season last year. And if that was the case, are we still a 13.5-point favorite? I don't know. Probably, because I think we are that much better. But I know some people look at it and say, well, Clemson's 8-4, like only 13.5. I mean, they were better than 8-4 last year, guys. It's just luck went against them. And that happens sometimes. And this year, let's look ahead to what they have coming back this year. They're top 20 nationally in returning offensive production. They return 79% of their offensive production. But the problem for them is, as I mentioned earlier, your quarterback is still Kay Klubnik. He is still your quarterback. I do not believe in the guy. I don't believe in him. I think he's good. He's solid, but he's not that guy. He is not a national championship caliber quarterback. They are not going to win a national championship with Kay Klubnik. They're not a serious contender for it. Now with the expanded college football playoff, could they get in the playoff with a 12-team playoff with Klubnik? Yeah, maybe, possibly. ACC still kind of sucks, and Florida State's not going to be as good this year. So there's still that chance, but they are not going to win a national championship with this guy. He is not that dude. Last year, I know it's his first year as a starter. I get that, but he was not good. It's just that simple, guys. He was not good. In fact, he was a liability for them at times, a lot like DJ Uiagalelei was. I know they thought they were getting an upgrade, and the fans were clamoring for Klubnik when DJU wasn't doing what they expect him to do. But Klubnik's kind of been more or less the same kind of guy. He's very inefficient. He is not a good decision. He's actually a terrible decision maker. Let's just be real. Terrible decision maker. He struggles to throw the ball down the field. Now, some of that was they don't have great receivers. That is an issue too. But, I mean, he was 63% completion percentage last year. And here's the thing. When you're 63% completion percentage, that's low in this day and age. What that would tell me is, okay, that's fine if you're an offense that's just pushing the ball vertically down the field and you're throwing a lot more of those low percentage throws. That's not what Clemson did. So to me, if you have a 63% completion percentage, that should mean that your yards per attempt should be upwards of like 9 or 10, because that would align, right? Lower completion percentage, which are low percentage throws. When you hit them, they're big explosive plays. Not the case for Kay Klubnik. He averaged 6.3 yards per attempt. That does not mesh well, guys. When your yards per attempt number is 6.3, that tells me you're throwing a lot of passes behind the line of scrimmage, a lot of short stuff, a lot of RPO game. And if that's the case, your completion percentage should be up near like the 70s. It should be honestly be in the 70s, like Carson Beck was. And Carson, so we still put this ball down the field more than Clemson did by far. So you have a guy that's very inefficient in terms of completion percentage. He's not pushing the ball down the field. He's not getting chunk plays. He only threw for 2,800 yards last year. He started every single game for them. 19 touchdowns, 9 picks. Horrible decision maker. Just made some absolutely baffling decisions with the football. And you're like, dude, I don't know what you're looking at, man. I know you're a first-year starter, but by the end of the year, you're still making a lot of those same decisions, and you're, I mean, yeah, still your first year, but you're a vet now. You're experienced, and you're still doing those things. The dude had four games last year with sub 60% completion percentage. In this day and age, guys, with all the easy throws guys get with the screen game and the bubble screens and RPOs, you should never be sub 60. That's horrific. That should never happen. And that's why I'm telling you, they are not winning a national championship with him, and that's why I don't really take them seriously as a team that's going to beat us. They don't have the guy at quarterback. Think about the teams that have beat us traditionally, guys. You got to have that dude at quarterback. Now, I say Alabama last year might be one of those exceptions because Milroe, he's talented, but he's still learning to play that position. But we played that poorly. That was on us. That was on us in that game. So, I mean, look, we got to take responsibility for that. But Klubnik's just not that guy. Now, receiver, okay, well, if you're not that guy at quarterback, do you have receivers to compensate for that, to make him look better? I mean, not really. I like Tyler Brown. I think he's pretty good. I think he's the best of the bunch. I don't think he's like an old, like a Mike Williams kind of guy. I don't think he's one of those dudes that's going to be a difference maker for them at receiver. Antonio Williams, kind of same thing. He's a solid slot receiver. Tony Stellato is kind of a guy, solid-ish, you know, serviceable, but he's not a game-changing kind of guy. Now, the one guy I do love is Jake Brenningstuhl. They're tight end. I think Brenningstuhl, he's elite. I think he's really, really good. I think he might be one of the best tight ends in the country this year. I think he could be a first-round draft pick. I know that there's not a huge positional value on tight ends, but I think he's a future NFL starter. I do at some point. I really like him. I think he's a good athlete. He's tall. He's long. He's a good receiver. He catches the ball well. He's physical enough in the blocking game. He's good. I think he's their best receiving weapon, their best pass catcher. But all in all, I mean, that's not a game-breaking group of receivers. At running back, Phil Maffa's good. I like Phil Maffa, but there's no Shipley this year. There's no Will Shipley to kind of like tag team it with. He is the guy for them this year, and he's good at what he does, but he's not an explosive back. He's a big physical guy. He'll run through you. He's got really good vision. He's good in the hole, can make you miss in the hole, but he's not a game-breaker. And that was more Shipley. Well, Shipley tried to run like a maniac. I mean, he ran really hard. And he was good, but he had terrible vision, to be honest with you guys. But I mean, I do think Moffa's good, but who's the guy behind him? It's only Moffa right now. They don't have an answer, at least that we know of right now, to be the 1-2 punch of Moffa. I think right now it's just a one punch. It's just Moffa. Now, defensively, this is where things are different. Defensively, they were great last year. They were elite last year. But this year, they do have some key returners coming back. You have guys like Barrett Carter, Wade Woodaz. Peter Woods is a young guy. I think he's the next really good defensive lineman for Clemson. He's a really good player, athletic guy, explosive guy. But they only return 49% of their defensive production. They return almost 80% of their offensive production, but their offense wasn't that good last year. So what does it mean those guys are back? Will they be moderately better this year? Yeah, probably. They did deal with some injuries at times. They'll probably be better offensively, but how much? I don't think all that much, but I don't think it really matters because I don't think they have the talent offense. Defensively, they still have some talent in key spots, but you're losing a lot of key players as well, including your best cornerback, Nate Wiggins, who went in the first round of the NFL draft. So even though, yes, they do have some key contributors returning. Now, Barrett Carter, I think, is good. But guys, there's a reason Barrett Carter came back for his senior season, because he wasn't getting the draft grade he wanted to. He's good, but he's kind of a tweener. He's not really a between-the-tackles kind of guy. And he's a really good athlete. Remember, former North Carolina guy, we recruited him really hard. I really liked him coming out of high school. But in college, he's kind of been a tweener. He's not really a true inside linebacker, like between-the-tackles kind of guy. The offensive linemen get on him, and he has a tough time disengaging. They just kind of control him. He's not really that big. Then you want to spread him out and play him. At times, they've kind of played him as like a nickelback in certain packages. He's a really good athlete, but he's not that kind of athlete. He's going to stay with like the best slot receivers in the country. So where do you play him? That's kind of been the issue for him, like even like translating to the NFL. But he's back this year, veteran, played a ton of football for them, and is a really good athlete, really good player. Wade Woodaz, I think, is an NFL guy. I think he's a really good player. Like I mentioned Peter Woods, I think he's going to be a really good player for them as well. But when you have less than half your production returning on defense, what that means for a program like Clemson, a program, again, that does not take anybody, not a single soul from the transfer portal, that means you are expecting a lot of guys. You're counting on a lot of guys to take big steps this year. And that's for a program that, as I said earlier, is not an elite recruiting program. They recruit well, but they don't recruit at an elite level. So while, yes, I do expect their offense to be somewhat improved this year with the experience they have returning, I expect their defense to take a step back. I still think their defense is going to be good. I do. They're going to be good, but they're not going to be as dominant as they were last year, in my estimation. Now, Clemson, I still think they should probably, I don't know if they'll win the ACC. They should contend for the ACC. Again, last year, they should have been 10-2, 11-1 the regular season. Florida State, I think they have to go to Tallahassee this year. Yes, that's true. But old DJU is at Florida State now, and I don't know, man. I don't know if I believe in Florida State this year. I think they'll be a good team. I think Clemson should have beaten them last year. I think Clemson will be better than Florida State this year. I know they're going to have to go to Florida State, but I think Clemson probably should win that game. And their schedule's not all that crazy. NC State, you know, was pretty good last year. They get them at home. They have to go to Virginia Tech late in the year. That could be tricky with Kyron Jones. But Clemson, at the very least, will be a serious contender for the ACC. But contending for the ACC doesn't mean you're ready for Georgia. Okay, let's just be real. It does not mean you're ready for Georgia. So I think 13.5 is fair. I do think that our roster is 2 touchdowns or more better than Clemson. And if we come out and play our game, we should win this game comfortably. I think, you know, if this line was anywhere between like 13.5 to like 17.5, I'd be okay with it. If it got much higher than 17.5, like 21, do I think we could beat Clemson by 21? Yeah, I do. But week one, you know, things get crazy. Remember what happened in 2021? We're still trying to figure things out. They'll be jacked up. It's a neutral site game. You know, things can happen. It's an old school rivalry game. But I mean, 13.5 to 17.5, I would take that. I think it's an awesome matchup between what I believe is going to be one of the best offenses in all college football this year versus what will be a defense. I do think it'll be a slight step back from what they were last year, but still going to be one of the better defenses in college football. I really like that matchup. And I do think Clemson's defense will make it tough for us. That's why I don't know if I'd go higher than 17.5 points. Because, I mean, against a defense that is still really, really talented and really good and really well coached, I just don't know if we're going to have enough opportunities to beat them. And they'll try to slow the game down. They know the deal. They know how good our offense is. They're going to try to play really good defense. They're going to try to run the football with Phil Maffa. They know that, you know, they don't have great receivers. They know that Klubnik's not that kind of guy at quarterback. They know that, guys. Trust me. You saw how they kind of changed their offense last year. And I expect a lot of the same. I think they're going to try to play a ground control type game, control the clock, limit our possessions. And by doing so, I think the style that they're going to play is going to keep us from winning, like, you know, going away like 21, 28 points. But 13.5, I think it's fair. I think we'll probably cover that. But we'll talk about that game a lot more as we get further into the offseason. But there you go. That's a pretty good primer, right? It's a pretty good first primer of this first week matchup with the Clemson Tigers. But all right, guys, that was a lot. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here before we get into the second game. We'll talk about Alabama here in a moment. But I want to remind you about our wonderful friends at Alumni Hall. Guys, Alumni Hall, man, they are they're the best. Like, you guys know this. I tell you all the time, but there's zero doubt in my mind. Because I recently just, I think I told you this last week, I went crazy and bought a ton of stuff from Alumni Hall. I need to do the unboxing video. I haven't unboxed the stuff yet, believe it or not, because I was going to do the video for you guys and show you that I'm not lying when I tell you that I have a problem and I buy all these things and I go crazy and spend probably way too much money. But I can't help it, because Alumni Hall is everything, guys. I go in there intending buy one or two things, and I come out with like 10... 12 different things, because it's great stuff. It is a Georgia fans paradise, and I want you guys to experience the same thing that I experienced. And all you gotta do is just go to alumnihall.com if you're not in the Athens area. They have all the stuff there. But if you're ever in the Athens area, you want to try some stuff on, just stop by inside the Epps Bridge Shopping Center. They have great customer service. The people are incredible. They're second to none, man. They just do it the right way. It's a really well-run company. And again, they have the best Georgia gear that you're gonna find anywhere. So give them a shot, guys, because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldogs shop.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
All right, guys, Alabama. Okay, we went long with Clemson. I'm probably going to go along with this one. See, this is why I had to split this episode this topic into two episodes, because I can't help myself, man. I'm just pumped. I get to talk football, and I want to go in detail with this stuff. So Alabama, according to DraftKings, right now, on May the 8th, we are a 4.5-point favorite on the road in Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's been a minute since Georgia Bulldogs have been favored in Tuscaloosa, but that is the case now with Nick Saban departing. You have the new coaching staff, the new regime coming in, headlined, of course, by Kalen DeBoer. Now, let's go back to the yardage margin. Alabama's yardage margin was not indicative of a team that should have been in the College Football Playoff. And honestly, they shouldn't have, guys. We know they should not have beaten Auburn. Like, they should... This miracle, man. It was an absolute miracle. And they shouldn't have beaten us, but they did. Give them credit, man. They beat us, and like we did to ourselves. Like, we did to ourselves. They played well enough to beat us, and we played terrible, man. The worst game I've seen us play in 3 years. And that happened. Happened at the wrong time, and we paid the price for it. But Alabama's yardage margin last year, guys, was not good. They were plus 1079. 1079. According to yardage margin, Clemson was better. Now, Clemson played the ACC, did not play the schedule that Alabama played. Clemson did not have to play Texas in the regular season. They didn't have to play LSU, then play teams like that. So Alabama's all the way down there, man. So Washington was 20. So Alabama was what? They were 14th in yardage margin last year. But somehow they went 12-2. They came up big and won some games that were tight games. They might not should have won. They could have gone the other way. But they, I mean, it's like South Florida. I mean, they could have lost a South Florida game, guys. But they figured it out late in the season. They were able to beat us, and they won the SEC title, tip of your cap, and they make it to the College Football Playoff. And yeah, what happens? They lose to Michigan, right? So I stand by everything that I was saying about Alabama last year. In no way was it a vintage Alabama team. Alabama, guys, like the glory years of Alabama, under Nick Saban, they're regularly plus 2,500 to 3,000 in yardage margin. This team was a fraction of that. It was not a vintage Bama team. Now, they won the games, right? Give them credit. They won the games they had to get the College Football Playoff, but it's still in no way was it the same caliber Alabama team that was winning national championships. I never considered them a true national championship contender. Like, when they got in the playoffs, I was like, yeah, they're going to lose. They're going to lose. They weren't that kind of team. They weren't that kind of, I know that. They beat Georgia. Well, we played terrible that game. We wet the bed. That was on us. It wasn't so much about Alabama. That was more about us. So that's the Alabama team that we have this year. That's the team returning. This is still not a vintage Alabama team. That program doesn't exist anymore. Alabama's still really good, guys. They're still really talented. They still recruit at a really high level. Nick Saban stocked that roster up. But it's not the same caliber team that it once was. They don't have the same caliber players as we ate into a lot of that. The transfer portal has certainly eaten into a lot of that. They just don't have this massive talent edge on teams that they used to. They could just bludgeon people. It doesn't happen anymore, right? And now the guy that was holding it all together and putting band-aids over all the cracks and trying to plug all the holes in the roster, Nick Saban, doing a miraculous job, honestly, the past couple years. He's gone. And now Kalen DeBoer, who's a good football coach, he's coming in, but man, you have the very unenvious job of following the greatest college football coach of all time. And it's just, it's a new message. It's a new culture. And it's just, there's going to be growing pains, guys. We'll go into this a lot more in detail as we get closer to the season. We do those scout on the enemy. I mean, Alabama guys could lose 3 games this year and it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I said that last year, and honestly, they could have lost 3 games. Then maybe even should have, but they didn't. Again, give them credit. But this year, they easily could, man. Yes, Jalen Milroe returns. And he will be a better version of himself this year, I think. He started to figure it out last year. It wasn't so much that he became a more proficient passer. He got more confident, certainly, but they just started playing to his strengths. They were asking him to do things that previous Alabama quarterbacks were doing ahead of him, guys like Bryce Young and Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones, and he couldn't do those things. He wasn't ready to do it, like go through the progressions, diagnose what defenses were doing. He could throw the ball 100 miles down the field and throw a beautiful deep ball. Beautiful deep ball when he gets one-on-one coverage. Like, if you gave him one-on-one coverage, that's why I was always like, why would anyone cover them one-on-one? Because if you give him those opportunities, they're just going to throw the ball down the field, and he's got a really good arm. He's accurate down the field in one-on-one coverages because he doesn't have to read anything. I would have thrown a ton of exotic defenses at him and made him actually read things, and he didn't do that very well last year. But he's really physically gifted, and they leaned into his strengths and what he did do well, and things turned around for them. If they had not done that, then they probably would have lost 3 or 4 games. But give him credit, they did lean into it, and he improved. And now as a full, not well, it wasn't a full year of starting under his belt, but now he's basically more or less going to second year as a starter, so he's more experienced. But here's the thing with Milroe. You would think he would take a step, right? And people, I hear all the time, well, Kalen DeBoer is the quarterback whisperer, kind of like Dan Mullen was, right? He just turns quarterbacks into goal wherever he goes. Okay. I mean, yeah, Michael Penix, he really did a good job with Michael Penix for sure. But this is a new offense for Jalen Milroe. Michael Penix is not the right comparison, guys. Michael Penix played under Kalen DeBoer at Indiana. That's why Michael Penix went to Washington. He was familiar with Kalen DeBoer and Kalen DeBoer's offense. There was zero learning curve. Well, Jalen Milroe, there's a massive learning curve. It's an entirely different offense. Jalen Milroe struggled to master the previous offense at Alabama. So we're expecting him to just master the new one in 1 year? How does that make any sense? That's irrational, guys. Nothing's impossible, but it's also irrational. It doesn't make any sense. Why would I think that's going to happen this year when he couldn't match the offense last year? They'd been in it for a couple of years. It just doesn't make sense, right? Like, are we following me here? It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Yeah, you would think, okay, yeah, year two is a starter. He makes a natural progression. Well, yeah, all things being equal, but it's not a natural progression in the same offense. It's a brand new offense. You can't just expect him to make a natural progression when he's having to learn an entirely new offense. That's just, it doesn't make sense. So I think he's really physically talented. I'm just very curious about the fit, man. I really am. I don't know if it will translate right away. And it better, because they play us fourth game of the year, guys. They don't really have time for Jalen Milroe to settle in this new offense. If he's not settled in by week four, they are going to lose that football game. But it's not just the Milroe thing. This is also a roster that loses their best offensive lineman that went in the first round of the NFL draft. They lose their top three pass rushers, and not just Dallas Turner, their top three pass rushers. Those top three pass rushers combined for 25 sacks last year. The rest of the team combined for 14 total. I don't know, man. You better find some way to rush the passer, because that's how they beat us last year when Marius Mims went down. They got after Carson Beck, and they kind of took us out of our offense, especially with Brock out, and or Brock playing, but not being Brock, and same thing with Ladd McConkey. That's what happened. That's what won them that football game. Who are those guys this year? Who? Who are they? I need to see them. I don't know who they are. They lost their two best cover guys. Won the top two rounds of the NFL draft. They lost their top three wide receivers. Lost their top two running backs. And oh yeah, that guy Nick Saban, only the greatest college football coach in the history of the game. They lost all of that. And then Milroe, going into his second year as a starter, sure, but in a brand new offense that, you know, I have questions if he's actually going to be able to master early enough to be able to win this football game. I really, really do. So put all that together and you have a recipe for a team that I think should be the underdog. I know Alabama fans are like, what? We own Georgia. We beat Georgia all the time. How can we be a 4.5-point underdog at home? It's Bryant-Denny Stadium. How dare you do that to the Tide? I can hear Roll Tide Willie going crazy right now. I know what they're saying, but they're in denial, guys. This is not the Alabama program that gave us all those issues back in 2017 and 2018. Hell, this isn't even the Alabama program from 2021. I know they beat us last year. I know what happened, guys. I was there. Trust me, I know. But that is not necessarily, and in fact, I don't think it is at all a precursor of what's to come in the future. I don't think it's indicative of what's going to happen in the future now that Nick Saban is gone. Because the reality is, guys, we kind of got in our own heads. Like, I'm firmly convinced of that. I think against Alabama with Nick Saban there, I think that we outsmarted ourselves. It's almost like we, like Kirby Smart, knew them too well, and so he overthought it. But that's not going to be the case this year. Nick Saban's not across the sideline, guys. He's not across the field on the other sideline. He's just not. He's not there. So when I look at this matchup and I consider all the roster issues, at least the losses from the roster they had last year, I consider all those things that I just went through, and you compare that to what they're going to be facing. That's against a Georgia team that does have a returning starter quarterback who was very, very proficient last year. I would argue the best returning quarterback in the country this year. And on top of that, you have a ton of young talent that played last year. They were really young last year, had to play before they were ready. Guys like CJ Allen had to play way before they were ready. But that experience is now going to pay dividends. We had some bumps in the road last year with those guys. But now that we're going to reap the benefits this year. That's where the rewards are going to be reaped. And we have one of the best offensive lines. We have a ton of weapons offensively. Now, I know that we don't have Brock Bowers, but we have so many weapons. We're going to be okay. And it's also a program, a team with something to prove. And you cannot discount that. A Kirby Smart team with something to prove, that is a very dangerous football team. And we're going to go into that stadium with something to prove. I fully expect us to win that game. I do think that the 4.5-point spread is fair. I think us being favored by 4.5 is about right. I think that we could win. We probably should win by a touchdown or more. But, you know, it's still a very tough place to play. It's still an extraordinarily talented team. And if we don't play well, like, we should have beat Alabama by 7 or more points last year, right? In the SEC title game. And we didn't. And this game's in Tuscaloosa. So, I mean, I'd be fine if the spread was 7. Or, I mean, even 7.5, I'd probably be okay with. I don't know if I would take it at 7.5. 4.5 is fair, though. If you consider the context where the game's being played, still a talented team. Kalen DeBoer is a good coach. It's just not Nick Saban. We are a more complete roster. We have a more experienced roster. We have more continuity in our coaching staff. Our culture is fully established. We're the team with something to prove. We're going to go in there. We're going to win that game. I think 4.5 is fair, though. I think 4.5 is fair right now. I can see us winning by 7+, but 4.5, I'll take that right now.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
All right, last game I'm going to break down today. Again, we'll do the final four on tomorrow's episode. But let's go with Auburn here. Auburn, woo! It's a big one, y'all. The Dogs are favored by 24 points against the Tigers in the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Woo! Okay, that's a big one. Now, I know you might look at that and say, man, it's a rivalry game. And hey, Auburn fans are sitting there saying, hey, man, we played Georgia within 7 points last year, man. We had them beat. We had them beat, baby. Well, no, you didn't beat us. So it is what it is. Yeah, was it a closer game than it should have been? Absolutely. But I tell you guys all the time, I think Jordan-Hare Stadium is one of the toughest environments to play in all college football. Of all the stadiums I go to, it's up there, man. It is way up there. When we are there, it's a crazy. Now, I've been there for some Georgia games where it wasn't that crazy. Like Mark Richt's last stand there was at 2015. That was a really surreal environment. Like, it just didn't seem like anybody cared. I feel like I was the only one who cared in the stadium. Because I thought Mark kind of saved his job when he won that game. I was going crazy. But, like, no one really seemed to care. But, like, you know, 2017, oh, my God. 2019, yeah. 21, yes. Last year, wild. I mean, last 4 or 5 years, it's just been out of control. Because it's always, you know, it's a big rivalry, of course. But now that we've ascended to the level of, in the college football landscape that we have, it's just taken on a life of its own, like more than I've ever experienced in my life. And it's just been wild. It's a tough place to play. Plus, Carson Beck, this was his first road start, did not play well in the first half, played really well in the second half, but didn't play well in the first half. We were also super banged up. Yes, Ladd came back and played a couple snaps in that game, but we were banged up at running back, we were banged up at receiver, we were banged up on defense. I mean, we were playing a ton of young guys that we weren't planning on having to play. So no excuses there. It's just context of why that game was closer than it should have been. And why that doesn't mean just because it was a close game last year, it's going to be close this year, especially now in Athens. Because we aren't going to have freshman linebackers like CJ Allen out there for them to exploit. And I love CJ, but he was a freshman early in his career last year, and they exploited him with a lot of that misdirection stuff. Even some of the veteran guys exploited him, but certainly a guy like CJ Allen. And here's another part of this, guys. Peyton Thorne is still Auburn's quarterback. I just can't take Auburn seriously if Peyton Thorne is still your quarterback. That guy, it got so bad from last year, they just don't even try to throw it in games. Like, there's like, we're just not going to try to throw the football because we don't trust this guy. But it was a combination. He wasn't great. True. It was his first year there. So there was certain, he came here in the summer, so there, you know, wasn't much time for him to pick up the offense. That's fair. He does have a full year to be their starter, to learn things more, but they're also, you know, changing coordinators. Phil Montgomery's gone. Hugh Freeze has taken over more of the play calling responsibilities to be more involved there. So I'm curious. Like, yes, he's there for a full year now, but is it the exact same offense? I imagine it'll be very similar, and they'll play to his strengths more. They know him more. He knows the system more. So he'll be better. I don't know how much it's going to matter. I just don't know if he's that good. Now, the one thing I will give Auburn, they have some improved weapons for him to work with. They have had a very poor receiving core for years now. It's been a long time since they've had some good players at receiver. They have some good dudes this year. They just picked up recently Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State, who I am not sure I believe is a true bona fide, legit alpha number one wide receiver, but I think he's going to have to be their number one guy by default because they just don't have those dudes. He's just so much better than anybody they have in their roster. The other guy I really, really like, man, I want him badly, is a true freshman. It's a dude by the name of Cam Coleman. I mean, I wanted him. I wanted Mike Matthews from Parkview. I wanted Ryan Wingo. I wanted all those guys. We didn't get any of them. I like the guys we got. I like Sokovia White. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he's underrated. I think Nitro Tuggle is going to be a good player. But, man, I really wanted one of those guys. I think Cam Coleman might be the best of the bunch. I think he's just a freak, man. He's a bona fide stud. Now, he's a true freshman. And as I told you guys earlier, like, you typically don't want to be in a position to have to count on true freshmen to be your guys. But Auburn's kind of in that position. That's where they are. It's where the roster is because, man, Brian Harsin just left them in a bad spot from a roster standpoint. So they're relying on a guy like that. I think it actually might pay off for him, though, in this case. I think he's just that kind of guy. You don't, by rule of thumb, you don't want to have to rely on those kind of guys. But I think they're going to have to rely on him. I think he might actually be that guy for them as early as this year. So he'll be good. Their weapons are improved. That will help Peyton Thorne. Defensively, though, I mean, they don't have the guys. Again, Brian Harsin left them in a bad spot. They are still trying to recruit themselves out of the hole that Brian Harsin left them in from a recruiting standpoint, and they're just not there yet. Hugh Freeze is a good recruiter. They'll get there eventually. And, you know, they're all in, right? That's what they like to say. We're all in, family, whole 9 yards. So they have a nice little war chest when it comes to the NIL, and they've already put that to use this year, getting guys like Keandre Lambert-Smith. But they'll use that money well, and then they'll get some guys in there, but it's not going to happen overnight. So their defense, they just don't have the depth. They have a couple good players. They had a bunch of good players in secondary last year, but all those guys were vets, and they're gone this year. Guys like Jalen Simpson, they're gone. They played a ton of football, and I don't think they have adequate guys to replace them, so I don't think they're going to be very good defensively. I think that our offense, as good as it's going to be, is going to be able to score. I don't know if saying at will is fair, but I think we'll be able to score fairly easily on them, especially at home in Athens. And here's the thing, guys. Auburn has had very little success. Certainly they've had very little success in general against Georgia. We're 8-1 against them under Kirby Smart. Actually, I know it's 8-1 against Kirby Smart. And in games not in Auburn, so in Athens, in the game we played them in the SEC Championship game in Atlanta, in games that we have played them that have not been in Auburn under Kirby Smart, we have beaten the Tigers by an average of 23 points. Well, the spread's 24. So if you look at the metrics, if you look at history, you look at the two rosters, I know 24 seems inflated. You're like, man, Auburn, Georgia, 24 points. I think it's fair, guys. I think it's about right. That's kind of just what we do to Auburn at home between the hedges under Kirby Smart. It's just what we do to them. And this roster, I do think, is better than what they had under Brian Harsin in the latter years of Gus Malzahn, but not that much better. I do think that Hugh Freeze is a good, solid football coach, but I just don't think they're ready for that yet. Maybe give them a couple years. Maybe they can close the gap some. I just don't think it's this year. Certainly not in Athens, inside Sanford Stadium. But all right, guys, that is all I've got for you today. Again, I have four more of these games to break down. I will do that on tomorrow's episode, so make sure to check that out. And again, guys, I would so greatly appreciate it if you would go to YouTube, search up Glory UGA Podcast, subscribe to the channel, watch some of the videos, like the videos, comment, all that stuff. That's so helpful, guys. I mean, again, I'm so grateful you guys just listen to the podcast. I appreciate that so much. But we're trying to get this YouTube channel off the ground, and I need your help. I know there's so many of you out there that are not subscribed. So if you have it in you, I would greatly appreciate that. But yeah, we got a lot more content coming up for you guys. Make sure to check back tomorrow. We are certainly not done with this week. Thank you for being here. I'm Tyler, and as always, go Dawgs!